5:55 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Hospitals and schools under attack in Syria. Air attacks in northern Syria Monday damaged or destroyed schools and hospitals, leaving at least 50 dead, drawing international condemnation. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called the attacks a blatant violation of international law. Susan Rice, the U.S. National Security Advisor, denounced the strikes that some believe were carried out by government or Russian forces.
What concerns us is that as the violence continues, more and more civilians are being impacted. And the pressure on civilians and the outflow of displaced persons from their areas of residence is increasing. And that is why we have put a premium on trying to halt the violence, enable humanitarian access, and create an environment that is conducive for a political track to get underway.
She said the attacks run counter to commitments made last week in Munich among members of the International Syrian Study Group that called for a cessation of hostilities. Meanwhile, Turkey continued its cross-border attacks aimed at Kurdish fighters in northern Syria, warning of a harsh response if Kurdish-led forces don't retreat from positions near the border. In Uganda, at least one person reportedly killed, several wounded, and others arrested in street clashes between police and opposition supporters of presidential candidate Kizza Besigye ahead of Thursday's election.
30 years, it's time to go. You have to go to get a new president.
Yes.
I was born 1988. Before I was born, you are the president now. Bye-bye to this is the time. This is Elijah Dion. Respect.
Besigye, trying for a third time to unseat longtime incumbent Yoweri Museveni, was briefly detained. He's one of two main candidates trying to unseat Mr. Museveni, who's been in power for 30 years. The other, former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi, who along with Besigye has attracted large crowds. This is VOA News. President Obama, hosting leaders of the 10 members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, said he wants to boost security and economic cooperation. He spoke at the start of a two-day meeting in California.
Together, we can continue to increase the trade and economic partnerships that create jobs and opportunity for our people. Since I took office, we've boosted trade between the United States and ASEAN by 55%. The region is now our fourth largest goods trading partner, including U.S. exports that support more than 500,000 American jobs. U.S. companies have been the largest source of foreign investment in ASEAN. One of the many reasons that the region's GDP has surged in recent years, lifting people from poverty into the middle class.
The participants are discussing trade, commerce, innovation, entrepreneurship, implementation of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact, violent extremism, and the creation of common set of principles to guide nations on a range of issues, including maritime disputes. Thousands of Mexicans gathered in a sports field in the impoverished southern state of Chiapas Monday for an open-air mass Pope Francis used to conduct in three indigenous languages. He asked his audience for forgiveness for past exclusion among many indigenous people from other church services. The Pope issued a decree allowing indigenous languages to be used during Catholic Mass. The U.S. has approved construction of the first American factory in Cuba in more than half a century, a two-man business that hopes to hire Cuban workers to assemble as many as 1,000 small tractors a year to sell to private farmers. Cuba analyst Ted Henkin of Baruch College calls it significant.
It is a good example of a real business deal, and the fact that one of the two men who are behind the company is a Cuban-American is also significant in that it'll be symbolic as a reconciliation between Cuba and the diaspora.
Cuban officials have already endorsed the $5 to $10 million project to be located in an economic zone near Havana. Bahraini police arrested four American journalists covering the anniversary of the island nation's democracy protests crushed by authorities 5 years ago. Authorities say they pretended to be tourists. UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in North Korea, Marzuki Derusman, warned Monday leader Kim Jong-un could be held accountable for alleged crimes against humanity. A commission of inquiry called for the prosecution of North Korean leaders at the International Criminal Court. European Union foreign ministers say they're prepared to increase economic sanctions on Burundi, which has been in a political crisis since July, when President Pierre Nkurunziza won a third term. The government of Democratic Republic of Congo says no demonstrations are approved for Tuesday, the day the opposition called for a general strike to demand President Joseph Kabila respect the Constitution and stand down ahead of November's election. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's main opposition says Monday's police attack on its supporters is a sign of ruling party desperation.
Because of the momentum that we have built around the country, we suspect that the justice will not understand how they'll be able to handle that.
That's retired Army General Mugisha Muntu, president of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change Party. Zimbabwe grounds a South African-bound plane with a diplomatic cargo. Liberia asked the U.S. for help to investigate the mysterious death of a prominent citizen. And a workers' strike on Monday paralyzes many regions of Guinea.
They asked the government to reduce the oil price at the gas station from 8,000 francs to 5,000. But the government said that's not possible because they have no money.
Mamadou Baldé is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers of Guinea. A proposed Libyan unity government faces harsh scrutiny by parliament, and the European Union launches emergency medical corps. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, the FDC, says Monday's police attack on its supporters is a sign of desperation on the part of the ruling National Resistance Movement. Party president and retired Army General Mugisha Muntu says the FDC has built enormous support around the country, and President Museveni's ruling National Resistance Movement does not know how to counter that momentum. Ugandans go to the polls on Thursday to elect a president. The police said FDC leader Dr. Chisa Besigye and his supporters violated an electoral commission order prohibiting anyone from holding a procession of any nature in the central business district of Kampala. General Muntu says Dr. Besigye will speak about the attack when he addresses Ugandans today, Tuesday.
Dr. Chisa Besigye was in the central division, and there was police interference blocking the rallies in that division, and that's what caused the confusion in the city.
The police, they are saying that your rally is causing confusion.
No, I mean, if one was to look at, for example, the day when the campaign started, it was one of the most massive processions from Nambole, which is about 8 kilometers from the city, and through the city to the central place, actually, where even today a rally was supposed to be held. And at that time, there was no the difference then and today was that the police interfered and blocked the rally, which was going to happen in central division. We've gone through 90 days of campaigns, and every place where we have gone, and there have been massive numbers of people. Whenever there is no police interference in the processions, or even where rallies are supposed to be held, there's never any problem at all. The problem always arises when there is police interference.
So what's next? Are you planning on campaigning in Kampala?
Yeah. Tomorrow is in a different division, and that's going to be the end of the campaigns tomorrow.
How is Dr. Besigye feeling about this?
There's going to be a press conference tomorrow morning to address the nation and give a position from the candidate and the party as well.
I know you had said that before, that the police are picking on the FDC. What do you think the police are focused on the FDC?
Just because they are panicking. Because of the momentum that we have built around the country, we suspect that the justice will not understand how they'll be able to handle that.
Retired Army General Mugisha Muntu is president of Uganda's main opposition forum for Democratic Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Authorities in Zimbabwe are holding a cargo plane registered by a U.S. company after it was found with a bloody quote on board when it stopped for refueling on Sunday in Harare. The company, Western Global Airlines, said the situation was currently under review. Sebastian Mofu has details from the Zimbabwean capital.
Zimbabwean authorities impounded a Western Global Airlines cargo jet after a dead body believed to be a stowaway and millions of South African rand were found on board. Civil Aviation Authority of Zimbabwe spokeswoman Anna Julia Hungwe said the South Africa-bound cargo plane was coming from Germany with what she said was diplomatic cargo when it landed Sunday in Harare for refueling, but it was not allowed to take off after a bleeding corpse was discovered to be on board.
The reason for grounding was to facilitate the investigation, which is now being done by the Home Affairs.
Police spokeswoman Cherit Charamba says all state security agencies are at the airport.
Investigations are still continuing. The team is firm on the ground since yesterday. So when they're investigating, normally they don't give updates because they have to tie up some loose ends.
News reports say it appears the dead person had sneaked into the plane's landing gear. The South African Reserve Bank says the aircraft was carrying a bank consignment and it is working with authorities to ensure the cargo is released and transported to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe authorities say the six crew member believed to be American, Pakistan and South African nationalities is cooperating with investigators. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Guinea's capital, Conakry, and other cities around the country are expecting more paralysis today, Tuesday, due to an open-ended general strike called by the country's trade unions. Shops, offices, and banks were closed yesterday and streets empty of traffic. Mamadou Baldi is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers of Guinea. He says the unions have called on the government of President Alpha Condé to reduce the cost of basic commodity and also fuel.
The strike has been called by the workers' union. They asked the government to reduce the oil price at the gas station from 8,000 francs to 5,000. But the government said that's not possible because they have no money. So today the strike has hold on today, from today and tomorrow and so on.
What was the impact of this strike on Monday?
Today, all the school administration, schools and traders did not work. So people were at home in Conakry and inside the region.
We here in the United States, gasoline prices have gone down. Is the government saying that it cannot afford?
Yeah, the government said that the gas economical situation in Guinea, the government cannot reduce the price because when they sell the gas, the taxes will help the government have money for the economy. So it's why they say that they cannot price of gas wait for 1, 2, or 3 months.
So are we likely to see more protests on Tuesday?
Yes, yeah, there were protests from area in Conakry. But the police went to again them this morning.
This is a strike to stay home, or did they go in the street to protest?
Yeah, some people go straight to protest. The young men.
But this is President Alpha Conde's second term. I think there was some promise that things were going to be different economically. Has there been any change since he began his second term?
Well, he promised to make a fall economically, but things will be difficult. He recognized it himself because Guinea government has, during the last election, they spent many money for the election. And they say also that Ebola was enough problem for the economy. All of that won't be difficult for the second term of the President Conde.
Mamadou Baldi is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The Liberian government says it has asked the United States to render assistance in the investigation of the mysterious death of Harry Greaves, a prominent Liberian citizen whose body was discovered January 31st on a beach near Monrovia. A U.S.-based pathologist has determined the cause of death to be drowning, but Liberians have been demanding to know the manner of Mr. Greaves' death. Was it accidental? Was it suicidal or murder? Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says the Liberian government is also interested in getting to the bottom of Mr. Greaves' death.
We have had a couple of meetings with the Americans, and the initial indications are that they will respond positively. But we have not received a formal response yet. We are doing this because we ourselves as a government want to know the actual circumstances leading to the death of Mr. Greaves and want to bring finality to this situation. But in addition to that, the Liberian National Police is carrying out an ongoing investigation and they are making progress. We will definitely get to the bottom of this.
So is your government satisfied with the report of the pathologist?
Let me say this. The autopsy that was conducted is part of the overall criminal investigation that's going on to determine cause of death. The pathologist carried out his operation in the presence of members of Mr. Greaves' family and other authorities from the Ministry of Justice. He gave an initial report, preliminary report, because there still has to happen toxicology tests. Then he will do a final report in about 10 days. So to say we are satisfied, no government can be satisfied when one of its citizens has passed away in this manner. That is suspicious.
Mr. Minister, I'm sure you may have heard that some people saying that when Mr. Greaves' body was delivered to the hospital, that the rectum was widely dilated and oozing blood. So is it possible that this theory that could the body have been washed before the pathologist came to do the test?
But this is the reason why we have to do an autopsy. An autopsy is a clinical examination of the body. And whether it's washed or not washed, the tissues will remain. The results of the autopsy, based on the preliminary report that was issued by the two pathologists, say that there was no intrusion by foreign objects. You know, whether the objects were present or not, they said there was no intrusion. And they determined that because they look at the tissues, they look at whether there were a hemorrhage, because after the pathologist completed attacks and issued a report, I myself had an interview with them because I wanted to understand further so that I would be able to respond to some of the concerns. And I did ask him, how do you determine whether a wound happened before he died or happened after he died? And they said there's a way to determine post-mortem injuries. Because if you are alive and you are injured, your wound, there will be bleeding, hemorrhaging. But if you have a wound after death, that is post-mortem wound, that's a way to determine these things scientifically. So the autopsy report, the preliminary report that we have, described the wounds that were on Mr. Greaves as being post-mortem wounds. And these things are easily discernible. So once the final report comes, which will include toxicology tests, these tests will show whether he had foreign chemicals in his body, whether there was poison, whether there was things that caused him to be impaired. This is an ongoing investigation. The government has been transparent all along.
Eugene Nnamdi is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The ball is now in the court of Libya's internationally recognized parliament in Tobruk to approve or vote down a newly named 18-member government. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab media reported tensions during a parliament debate Monday on whether to approve the government proposed by Prime Minister-designate Fayez al-Sarraj. He insists the new 18-member cabinet is broadly based, though it is smaller than a 32-minister panel voted down by parliament last month. Sarraj says the new ministerial council is composed of 13 ministers with portfolios and 5 ministers of state. Fathi al-Majberi, who belongs to the presidential council named in last year's national unity agreement, stressed the new government must put an end to turmoil in the country. He says that the cabinet will represent a new beginning for Libya and an end to conflict so that all Libyans can unite their efforts to battle the country's sole enemy, terrorism. Al Arabiya TV reported a parliamentary meeting Monday in Tobruk broke up before coming to any decision on whether to approve the government. Several members of the new unity cabinet were reported to be considering withdrawing their names. Political scientist Ghazi Ma'ala told Libyan TV it is not at all clear whether the parliament in Tobruk will approve the new government.
He says that Parliament appears to be divided and chances are 50-50 of it approving the cabinet. But he stressed that voting down the government could lead to unexpected consequences. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, told VOA the new government was not extremely solid. It is the product of compromise, he says, cobbled together using the least common denominator. Many of its members, he argues, come from the old regime and run the risk of being voted down by Parliament. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The European Union has launched a new medical body aimed at quickly responding to emergencies like Ebola and Zika. Lisa Bryan has more for VOA from Paris.
The European Union's medical corps will be able to act both within and outside Europe. EU Commissioner for Humanitarian Aid, Christos Stylianides, who announced the body on Monday, says it will allow the region to respond to health crises more quickly and more efficiently.
Allowing Europe to deploy medical teams, field hospitals, public health experts, LAMPS, medical capacity and logistical support. Rapidly and predictably.
The new body was developed after the Ebola outbreak that ravaged West Africa. Its creation underscores the problems of quickly responding to the crisis and coping with the logistical and other challenges Ebola raised. Today, another virus, Zika, is alarming the international health community. Speaking in Brussels, World Health Organization head Margaret Chan discussed how efforts to contain Zika, which is spread by mosquitoes, are different than those focused on Ebola.
Mosquito control rests with every household. If I tell you two-thirds of the mosquitoes brew in households instead of in the environment, so that means every household must take their act. The government alone cannot do it all.
Commissioner Stylianides says so far, 9 EU states have pledged teams and equipment for the medical body, which will be linked with WHO. He called on other member states to join. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The European Union foreign ministers say they are prepared to increase economic sanctions on Burundi, which has been in a political crisis since July when President Pierre Nkurunziza won a third term. The EU ministers meeting in Brussels on Monday said the European Union stands ready to impose sanctions against those in Burundi who have contributed to the country's violence as well as those who have hampered a political solution. However, the EU minister says they would not suspend humanitarian aid to Burundi. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Hosts Cameroon dismissed Algeria in three straight sets as Egypt pipped Kenya 3-2. In semifinal action at the Africa Women's Volleyball Olympic qualifiers in Yaounde on Monday, Botswana edged Tunisia 3-2 in a classification tie. Today, Tuesday, Kenya plays Algeria in the bronze medal playoff before Cameroon tackle Egypt in the finals. Turning to athletics, Ethiopian Mesret Defar returned to the limelight after 3 years maternity absence when she stormed to a convincing victory in the 3,000 meters in 8 minutes and 30.83 seconds at the IAAF Indoor Tour meet in Boston, Massachusetts States in the United States of America on Sunday. This is the world's quickest time in the event this year. Fellow Ethiopian and world junior champion Dawit Seyaum triumphed in the women's 1,500 meters in a personal best and world leading time of 4 minutes and 1.86 seconds, while Dejane Gebremeskel of Ethiopia won the men's 3,000 meters. Kenyan Bethuel Birgen was runner-up in the 1 mile, as Uganda's Julius Mutekanga placed third in 600 meters. Moving on to football, following the withdrawal of Togo, Algeria plays Ethiopia in the first round of the qualifiers for the 2016 Women's Africa Cup of Nations. The Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo tomorrow, Egypt on Monday. The qualifiers get underway next month. Cameroon will host the finals of the tournament that kicks off in November. In Cameroon, Belgian tactician Hugo Bruce is the new coach for Cameroon's national team, the Indomitable Lions, the Cameroon Football Federation revealed in Yaoundé. His immediate task is to put together a side that will face South Africa in the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers next month. In boxing, China's WBA international super bantamweight champion Zhao Jun prevailed over Ghanaian challenger Raymond Comey with a unanimous point verdict in their showdown in Luzhou, China. Earlier on, fellow Ghanaian Taki Anan suffered a first-round technical knockout against China's Sha Bo in the fight for the WBC Youth World Super Lightweight title. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts and Trivia question for today, February 16th. On this day in 1923, blues singer Bessie Smith, known as the Empress of the Blues, made her first recording. It was called Downhearted Blues. Smith sang about things in life that give people the blues, things like poverty, racism, and love that is not returned. Her songs capture the sadness and joy of many African Americans. Also on this day in 1970, Joe Frazier became world heavyweight boxing champion after knocking out Jimmy Ellis in the second round at Madison Square Garden in New York City. On this day in 1972, during a basketball game between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Phoenix Suns, Will Chamberlain became the first man in the history of the NBA to score 30,000 points. Today in Black History, we want to tell you about African-American composer, pianist, and big band leader, Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington. Born April 29, 1899, Duke Ellington was one of the outstanding musicians in the world. He led a big band, played the piano, and wrote over 1,000 songs. Both the United States and France awarded Duke Ellington their top honors. In the African history on this day in 1977, the Most Reverend Junani Luwam, Anglican Archbishop of Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and Boga Zaire, was killed while under arrest for sedition and arms smuggling. It was revealed that Luwam and two prominent government officials were killed on the orders of then Ugandan head of state Field Marshal Idi Amin. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 16th. Congratulations to Unchagwa Chacha Hamid of Tea Time, Mara, Tanzania, Nelson Singini of Mashake Cottage in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, and Ibrahim Oyakami of Ibadan, Oyo State in Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 15th question, who wrote the lyrics for Lift Every Voice and Sing, sometimes called the Negro or Black National Anthem? The answer, James Weldon Johnson. Now here's our question for today, February 16th. Who is the first African-American Supreme Court Justice? Once again, who is the first African-American Supreme Court Justice? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotin, Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the Uganda presidential elections with Shaka Sali in Uganda and me, Esther Gidu Yuart, as the studio guest host. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modu discusses female circumcision, also known as female genital cutting. Our guest is Angela M. Peabody, president and founder of Global Woman Peace Foundation. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program.